Voices Radio Network.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave is on holiday. You're in Turkey, right?
I am. I'm in Antalya in Turkey, sat by the pool.
Wow.
As we speak.
Wow. So we are recording live on location in Turkey from the resort. How's the weather over there?
Lovely. About 26, 28 degrees. Warm, but not stupidly warm. You know, you're having to hide from it.
I like that. And you're right on the ocean, right?
Yeah. When we spoke earlier on, I was sat on the beach, but I've moved up to the pool one of the pools by the hotel at the moment.
Now, what ocean is that?
This place has got about 10 pools. I've no idea. I haven't got a clue. Embarrassingly so, my geography is very, very bad, and I don't really know where Turkey sits in the
You just ended
the
up
landscape,
there.
So to speak. Yeah.
You're totally lost right now. If you had to leave Turkey, you wouldn't know where to go.
No.
You wouldn't know which direction. Oh, man.
I got lost in the old town when I went there yesterday shopping and couldn't find the way back to where the taxi was picking us up. So don't be asking me where I am in the world. I'm stuffed.
So,
seas that way and the food's behind me, and that's all I really need to know.
Yeah, so Turkey, is that a common destination for people in the UK to go visit? Because here in the US...
Yeah, like, I think it got a little bit of... because of some friction between Turkey and some of the neighboring countries.
Okay.
Particularly, and also as Turkey's a Muslim country, and there's been sort of a lot of almost anti-Muslim feeling in the UK, bound off the back of terrorist attacks and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It took a bit of a hit. But you know what? Lovely people, friendly. Feel very, very safe. Security is definitely on the up. Clean, very, very clean. Can't fault it. Really can't fault it. Really good value for money. And like I said, the hotel's lovely. I think we've got something in the region of about 10 different pools, 10 different restaurants.
Nice.
It's just really nice, and they're very helpful. And yeah, can't complain. I mean, we went into the main city yesterday to the old town and went to one of the bazaars. And you get a little bit of hassle, a little bit pushy in their sales technique, but it's all a bit of a game, if you know what I mean. You know, they offer you something, they give you a price, you tell them to shove it up their arse, if you're not paying that, you're rubbing salt.
Yeah, yeah.
They act insulted, and you say, fine, don't care, I'm going. And then they'll come back after you, and they'll offer you a sensible price, and then you barter, and then you're happy, and then you shake hands, and everybody's friends again. It's just a game. It really is just a game. It's just sort of a ritual they go through.
You know, I bet too, because there's a lot of factors, I think, that go into that bartering game, and I feel like those guys might be a little intimidated to lowball Dave Crossland low.
Everybody yesterday thought I was either German or Russian.
Yeah.
And they're not. The Russians haven't got the best reputation over there, and I'm not quite sure why. Haven't yet found out why, but just one shop said, "You Russian?" I went, "No, English." He went, "Oh, thank God for that."
Oh, wow.
So, I'm not quite sure what goes on there, but yeah, they were all talking to me in German because they all thought I was German. I'm not bloody German.
Wow.
But I picked up this eucalyptus tea.
Okay.
Oh, that stuff is unreal.
Really?
Oh, blows your head off, but in a good way. If you ever got a cold, this stuff will sort you out. There's no denying that.
Eucalyptus
tea is mad.
I've used it before. I've drank eucalyptus before, but I bet that it's fresh over there. If that's their thing, I bet it's like here. If you go down to the Caribbean, the coffee is really good because the coffee grows down there. If they grow eucalyptus there, then I have a feeling that that's probably a whole different world than the tea here.
Big fan of Blue Mountain Coffee.
Nice. And that's kind of what I... yeah, it can be. And that's kind of like the way I feel Turkey must be to you guys. Is it sounds like it's a quick place to go on a holiday. Kind of like here, we go to the Caribbean. You guys could go there, we go to the Caribbean. Because for you guys, the Caribbean would be a long flight. But for us, it's, a few hours.
Yeah, I think Caribbean's 10 hours, 11 hours for us, 10 hours or something. Something in that 8, 10 hours, whereas Turkey's 4.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
So it's a fairly short walk for us. Obviously, Spain's only an hour, just over an hour, hour and a half.
I spent a lot of time on UK message boards, and there were a lot of guys that were going to Thailand for vacation. Is that still a popular thing to do with guys in the UK?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Turkey's only popular in the bodybuilding community because you can go buy your gear from the chemist.
Oh. Nice. Have you visited the chemist?
No, we haven't yet. It's still on my list to do. So that makes it very, very popular with a lot of UK bodybuilders because they can come and they can just buy it over the counter.
Okay.
And Thailand's a little bit the same way. So you can get your gear in Thailand quite easily as well.
How long's the trip to Thailand?
What's Thailand? Was it around 11 hours?
Oh, so it's still about 11 hours. Okay. It's still a hike.
Yeah, I went to Thailand a couple of years ago. I really enjoyed that as well. Absolutely love Thailand.
Really? Now, are you training there?
Nah.
No gym at all. Do they have a gym if you wanted to?
They do. It just looks half decent. Yeah, just I haven't made my way there as yet. No. A lot of walking yesterday and just messing around in the pools and generally staying active and not really eating much, to be honest. Just
really
a bit of what fancy, but not a lot.
Are you going to eat anything special today? Because I got to tell everybody, guys, today, while we record this, while Dave's on holiday, today is Dave's birthday. So happy birthday, Dave. Are you going to celebrate with some food tonight?
Well, I have a very nice bottle of whiskey in my room that might get one tonight. But I don't know. We'll see what there is when we go down to the restaurants later.
Nice.
I got a nice birthday card and a big banner on my front door of my hotel room this morning when I got up from the hotel.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's cool.
But I think it was more designed for children because the card said, "Happy birthday, kid."
Nice. It's just what they happen to have on hand.
Yeah, just what happened to laying around. I don't think they looked at the year. They just looked at the date and thought, "Oh, we've got a birthday. Let's stick that on his door."
That's cool, man.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, all good.
Nice. And how much longer are you going to be there for?
A week. Go back. Literally a week today.
Oh, nice, man. That's a hell of a trip.
Yeah. So 10 days in total. So we fly back next Tuesday, and then we get back sort of early evening, mid-evening.
So on the topic of bodybuilding, we had a topic today. So, guys, we're going to talk about a topic, then we're going to go to break, and then after that, we'll come back, and we have a whole bunch of questions to answer. Guys, we still don't have any love and relationship questions for Dave. We might have one, but I want to start getting a pool of these things together, and we're going to hold a contest. If you submit a love and relationship question and we pick it, then you will get a free Advices Radio t-shirt. So, oh, actually, you know what? I just got a text. And, I got a relationship question for us, Dave. I got one.
Oh, wonderful.
So we've got Dave's Love Corner, and I don't know what we're going to call it, but we'll come up with a name for the segment. But we'll get to that a little bit later. For starters, though, we have a topic, and today we were going to discuss diuretics in the sport of bodybuilding. I think that they're a very controversial drug, or just drugs, I should say. There's a lot of different types of diuretics out there, and if you use them wrong, this is one of the drugs that can definitely end your life. And it's a frightening thing to think that we do this sport because we love it, and that we could possibly push to the point of danger and actually dying from doing what we love. So I think it's something that should definitely be taken serious, and we wanted to discuss it today. I have some thoughts that might be a little counter to a lot of the rhetoric that I think is being put out nowadays about diuretics, but I'll get to that in just a minute. For starters, Dave, Let's talk about the types of diuretics that there are. I mean, generally, I think the things that people use most are diuretics that are going to eliminate potassium and sodium. And then there's diuretics that will focus mostly on sodium. And then I would say, what, a third category would be things like aldactone that are going to work on aldosterone. Am I correct in this?
Yeah, you've got your potassium-sparing diuretics, and then you've got your non-potassium-sparing diuretics, and then, like you say, aldactone sort of sits there a little bit on its own. I mean, the thing is with aldactone will strip just about everything out.
Okay. I've never used aldactone before.
The amount of people I know that have used it and then have known that they can't get full, they can't pump up, they can't do this, and it will pull glycogen, it will pull water, it will pull everything out of the muscle, so it's really one I would avoid. And when you do use it, you tend to have to really up the carb load in order to compensate for the effects that it's drawing so much out. It is harsh.
Okay.
So I've never, I mean, in the ideal world, obviously you wouldn't use them. You know, in an ideal world, you're going to be so lean, you're going to be so shredded, you're not going to hold any water because there's nothing there to hold water in.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if you're lean and you are properly lean, then there's very little reason for water to sit under the skin. But if you're not, or you're not quite where you want to be, they can rescue a physique. They can also destroy a physique. Timing is ultimately incredibly difficult with them. And it's like a lot of drugs. The big problem with them generally is that people don't respect them, and they don't realize how effective and how dangerous they can be. And they completely forget that they've used them post-show. And when you die in and you've been prepping, particularly if it's been a hard prep, the last thing you want to be thinking of coming off stage is, I've got to watch now what I eat. I've got to watch now my fluid intake, because if I don't, I'm going to get a massive rebound. If I go and eat a real heavy sodium diet, which is what I want to do, because I want to go eat pizza or I want to go eat burgers, but I've taken a diuretic that stripped potassium out of my system, and I am now particularly depleted of potassium, and I'm now going to sodium load, then could very much start having effects on the signaling system that controls your heartbeat. And most people that suffer fatalities for diuretic use is to do with the potassium levels and screwing them up, and therefore screwing the control of the heart.
I feel like diuretics used to be very popular, but they aren't so much anymore. I feel like in general, what I hear nowadays are people that say, hey, I can get you, coaches that say, hey, I can get you in shape and I don't use diuretics, that we won't need diuretics. It's almost I think a selling point now that coaches will say that they aren't going to use a diuretic with you, that they're so good that they won't need a diuretic. And honestly,
the thing is, every coach I've ever seen that quotes, they don't use this drug or they don't use that drug, or they don't put the guys on big cycles, or they don't do the, it's full of shit, and they do.
Yeah.
So I think any coach that says I can get you lean without diuretics is talking out of the fucking arse.
Yeah. Well, you don't know. you don't know what you can do.
Because it's not the coach that gets you lean. It's you that gets you lean. The coach just tells you how to do it.
Yeah.
If you don't follow the coach, you know, it's ultimately it's you that gets you lean, because it's you that follows the instruction. If you don't follow the instruction, then no coach can compensate for that. And a lot of coaches sell off the back of their clients. They sell off how their clients look. And if you've got a client that, for all intents and purposes, is spot on, apart from his worry because he hasn't behaved himself, and you want to put him on stage, you want to pull him in tight, then is that coach going to not say use diuretics so that he looks his best?
Yeah.
Because that's bad for his business, let alone for the client, if he looks shit.
Yeah. You know, I think that it can be on the part, you know, you're talking about the responsibility of the client And that is definitely true. I think, too, there's the responsibility of the coach that, you know, at the same time, he's not always perfect, and that we're dealing with, you know, we're dealing with human beings, and each human being is going to behave and respond differently to, you know, whatever diet you're using with them. And that might mean that, you know, it could still be the coach's fault if the client, you know, was still holding water, you know, because we're, like I said, it's not a perfect science. There's no be-all, end-all diet, you know.
It's very much a two-way street. And how any coach can claim to be able to do anything with any person when they don't know them is beyond me.
Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that.
You know, getting someone big is has a lot more flexibility and wiggle room than getting somebody lean does.
Yeah. How so?
Ultimately, you know, getting somebody lean, there's less ways around it, because ultimately the person's just going to have to not fucking eat and do a lot of moving. Well, it's the truth at the end of the day, isn't it? You know, ultimately you're going to have to starve a little bit and move quite a lot to get properly lean.
I like that.
You don't get shredded without suffering. It's as simple as that. There's no way around that. There's no one ever stepped on stage that is truly shredded, peeled to the bone, that hasn't suffered for it. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are sort of ways around the ball where you can get food in that's a little bit less traumatic than other ways if you need to with a client, so to speak. So, but it's a partnership at the end of the day, and it's a two-way street. And I'm, you know, there are good coaches out there that just don't suit certain people, and there are certain people that just don't suit certain coaches.
Sure, sure.
And it's not always about going to the coach with the best reputation. It's about going to the coach that fits you.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that for sure.
You know, some clients need a shitload of emotional support.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit. You know, some clients are on the phone every 20 minutes. You know, I'm not big enough. I ate a pickle, didn't I? And that's my prep ruined. I'm going to die. I'm going to curl up in the corner and kill myself now. And some clients, you just say, go do this. And, you know, you have to chase them up in a week and say, right, have you done it? Yeah, I've been doing it for a week. What's up? Because they just switch on and off they go. You know, everyone's a little bit different. So a lot of having a successful relationship is finding a good partnership.
Yeah.
And that isn't always about the results of that coach. It's about recognizing you as an individual and what you need to get you through a prep. And if you know you're a needy fucker, then you need a coach that can put up with that.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean, you know, there's a couple of coaches out there that are good, but have got reputations for not being particularly wordy in their responses. That ain't going to work if you're a needy fucker, because you're going to end up having a mental breakdown, because all you're getting back is yes, no. You're not getting the essay you want, or the emotional support you need. So it's about picking what works for you. And that goes into the same thing with diuretics. You know, they will rescue a physique. They will help you out of a jam. Are they necessary? No. Are they useful? Yes. Have they lost popularity? Yeah. I'm not sure they've lost popularity, but I think they've lost popularity in being open about using them.
Okay, I can see that.
Quite clandestine in that way, in that they're now something you don't admit to. You know, it's like synthol use. You don't admit to using synthol. You don't admit to using diuretics.
I could see that. And
where there's been a move within the industry to try and promote greater health, it's not always resulted in greater health. It's resulted in people shutting up about the shit they do that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because they now fear judgment for that.
And here's my thought. I've seen some people who got into great shape, and they didn't use a diuretic when they maybe should have. I've known some coaches that haven't used the diuretic when it may have been able to push that client just a little bit further. In fact, I mean, I can even say that last year when I prepped, I did 3 shows. The second show, I didn't use any diuretics, and I trusted that I would be dry enough. And you know what? I came in really good, but I knew that I could have been a little bit drier, a little bit tighter. And it was a great peak outside of that. And I did well. I looked good. The next show, having had that information now a month later, I decided, you know what, if I need this, I'm going to use this. And I did. I took a half a tab of diazide the evening before the show. And you know what? It worked perfect. I mean, I was right there, and the diazide just dried me out that much further, and it allowed me to eat a little bit more without spilling. It was exactly what I needed. Because, you try to time the water up as best you can, but you can't always get that perfect. And a diuretic will allow you to, you can always put more water in if you need to, but the diuretic allows you to take a little bit more water away. And when I talk about diuretic use, I'm talking about a quarter of a diazide, a half of a diazide.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very valid point in that you're talking about quarter and half tablets. You know, you're not talking about dropping half a tab every 2 hours or every 4 hours for 3 days going into the show.
God, no. God, no. In that case, you did something very wrong leading in, right?
I've seen guys put on that even when they were in good condition.
Hey, I think that when I first started competing,
this amount of, and then when they the post show and they rebound by 20, 30 pounds and they can't breathe and they can't move and they feel like they're having an heart attack because they very nearly are. And it's like with all drugs, there is no evil drug.
Mm.
There are drugs that are harsher. There are drugs that have some quite potentially strong side effects. But no drugs are evil. It's just a case of you've got to manage the drugs correctly and you've got to prepare for the effects of that drug correctly. And if you're going to use a diuretic, then you've got to manage the rebound. You cannot just go and open the hell gates and eat your way through the back end of a pastry in a Chinese takeaway. If you've run diuretics, because the effect, the accumulation effect of all that sodium going in and all that shit food and all that sudden water retention is potentially lethal.
Mm.
And if not, at the very worst, it's extremely painful and uncomfortable. And you're going to feel like shit for several days and you're going to be very bloated and very painful in the joints and a million one other things, you know, particularly if you've been messing around with growth hormone and other drugs as well. So it's, you want to use them, you've got to need to use them, fine. But respect them and don't just use them as throwaway tablets I don't have to do that much because I'm just going to take diuretics.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no drug that's going to replace being lean. There are things you can do to minimize mistakes and minimize fuck-ups and improve accidents and problems that have occurred. But ultimately, if you want to be bang on, you're going to have to put the hard work on. And then a small amount of certain drugs, like a diuretic, can just polish that final bit and give you a bigger window in which you can work into time-wise. Because we all know what it's like seeing guys step on stage for pre-judging looking amazing. It's run over onto the night show. When they come to the night show, they look like a sack of shit because they're watered out, or vice versa.
Yeah, I've seen it both ways. But a lot of times, you could have been fuller, right?
Yeah, and then coming fuller and drier because I've had time to get more food in by the night show. And when shows extend, by seeing guys ready to go on stage at the time they should be on, 8 o'clock in the evening, and they've not gone on until 11 o'clock. By the time they've gone on 11 o'clock, they're tired, and they're starting to water out, and legs are smoothing out, and they look like a sack of shit again.
Yeah.
So, diuretics will help extend that window of opportunity you've got, but they're definitely not a cure-all.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a case, it's like, you just need to respect them. And that small little tablet can have a hell of a lot more power than you realize.
Yeah. I think that when I first started competing, the protocol that was very popular was what Dave Palumbo had promoted, and that was a half a tab of diazide, about, I believe, three times through the evening Friday, and then Saturday morning another half a tab. That was pretty much the common, and I knew a lot of people, including my first show, that's what I did, just followed that protocol. I thought that was the answer because that's what I read. I thought this is how you do it.
The thing is, these protocols, though they can be thought up with the greatest intention, they don't take into account anyone's situation.
Yeah.
So someone going into that protocol who was already very lean and wasn't a big drinker, so had already naturally been quite well dehydrated because they were struggling to get water intake, and then they added that on top, that would have been lethal.
I was drinking three gallons of distilled water going into that, and then I cut that out, tapered that down. By the day of the show, I was basically seeing flickering lights and almost going.
yeah, you'd have been so washed out of salts, there'd have been nothing left in you.
Yeah, yeah. It was rough.
You'd have had no sodium, no nothing in you. You'd have just it was still clear. It's coming out every day. You could have drunk it again with no problem.
Oh, man. And before that, it was the loop diuretics. You know, before that, people were using Lasix, you know, a decade before, which was I think, even more dangerous. Dangerous quickly, especially the injectable Lasix.
Yes. Yeah. I'd say I think it's a drug that it's fashionable now to be sort of antidiuretic, but I don't think it's actually as fashionable not to use it as people like to think.
That's a good insight. That's a good insight, because I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right about that. That people are still using them. They're just not talking about it.
We've had the same with blood tests. How often do you see now online? Take blood test. Take blood test. Take blood test.
Mm.
And they do bloods. And then they don't understand what the blood results say, and they'll put up abnormal blood readings and go, well, that's normal for someone to bodybuild. Hmm. But what's the fucking point in taking blood tests if you're not going to investigate the results that you get?
Yeah.
Whether it's normal or not, check them.
Hmm.
How do you know it's normal? How do you know it's normal for you? You don't investigate. But now it's all just fine. I've seen levels of CK of 4,000 posted on a page that was supposed to be full of people that knew better.
What's a normal level?
260. Wow. 169. And people saying, oh, it's because you've done it just before you trained, or it's because you carry so much muscle mass. And it's like, no, it ain't. That ain't normal. Even if he just trained an hour before he took his blood, it shouldn't be that bloody high.
Yeah.
A few questions later, a bit of investigation, done a PCT, didn't feel he'd recovered. So I said, right, okay. So I said, right, get a quick hormone test, did a quick hormone test on his arms. I said, right, you're catabolic. The reason your CKs are so high is because you are chewing up muscle tissue like there's no tomorrow.
Mm.
Put some TRT in, CK dropped through the floor. Because his body was no longer burning through muscle tissue anymore, because he wasn't in a catabolic state, because his test levels were back up to support his muscle mass.
Okay.
So, you know, but the worrying thing was that all these knowledgeable people, and I'm not for 1 minute claiming that I'm super knowledgeable and they're thick, it's just you do see a lot of dismissive with blood results when they're abnormal because, oh, it's normal for a bodybuilder. It's like, well, it isn't. It might not be. You know, check it, double check, look at it, have an extra look. If it's supposed to be, well, that's because you train nearby, then redo the test without training for 4 days prior to it and double check. Because at the end of the day, when there is a problem, it's too late then. The problem's there.
Yeah.
So if you can't take 4 days off just to double check your health, then, you know, come on, guys, sort it out. And you see that it's with so many things now where we have these trends and fashions where we're supposed to be much more health conscious now, much more aware now. We're all doing blood tests. We're not doing diuretics. We're not doing this. We're not doing that. It's bullshit. All we're just doing is we're not talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's jumping on Mediform over here at the moment because it's not an SEO. Yes, it is.
Hmm.
It's water-based, but all it does is it pulls water into its superhydrate cells and fills cells up with water. That's why it's used as a lip plumping agent in cosmetics.
Right.
And it can last 2 to 9 months. Some of the newer versions can even last up to 2 years of an effect. Which... Oh, no, it's helping the muscle grow by giving it more nutrient. Well, I'm sorry, but... The basics of muscle tissue stimulation are that you need a training stimulus to grow. You know, you're not going to pump nutrients into muscle. It's not going to fucking grow unless it's got a cause to grow.
Right.
So the basic knowledge of muscle stimulus tells you that that's not part of the bullets. But people don't want to sit there and say, oh, I'm taking an SEO, because an SEO means Synthol, and that's associated with Synthol, and Synthol's bad, and Synthol only idiots take, and the bollocks, hundreds of thousands of bodybuilders take Synthol. They're just quiet about it. Tons of pros take Synthol.
Sure.
They're just quiet about it. Yeah, there are those idiots that abuse it and look like oil-filled gas bags, but, you know, there's plenty of pros that use it to finish physiques and do so very, very well. There is no harm, there is no shame in taking Synthol as there is in Mediform. If that's what you want to do, fine. Just be honest and open about it. just don't bullshit people and say, oh, no, it's not that, it's because of this. Because you give people an unrealistic expectation of what they can achieve. And we get this so much, this misinformation and this grey front on everything because we don't want to admit it. You know, and we'd be a lot better as a community if we were just a lot more honest about the shit we did.
Yeah.
And that just goes back to the diuretic use. So I don't think it's dropped as much as people think because there isn't been a massive change in physique. So what we suddenly all learned how to do it and we haven't done for the 20 years before. So what were we doing before then? Just taking them for the sake of it?
All right, you know, Dave. Well, let's get to a commercial break. And then when we come back, let's get to our questions. What do you say?
Okay.
All right, guys, we will be right back. Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to take this break and give some credit where credit is due. He didn't ask me to do this commercial, but I am doing it. And that's because I'm grateful. So thank you, Dave Crossland. Thank you for your contribution here at Advices Radio. And thank you for your contribution to bodybuilding as a whole. Guys, you can check out more of Dave over at his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professionals, as well as advising individual users. And be sure to check out his YouTube page. It's at UC The Freak. That's the letter U, the letter C, The Freak. So you can't miss him there. The guy's all over YouTube. All right, guys, we will get back to the program in just a moment. Hey, guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout-outs,
listener questions,
and, of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and we've got a bunch of questions. To start us up, I'm going to go over to the Facebook thread. Oh, I should mention, too, a lot of guys aren't members over at the forum, but we do have a forum over at Advices Radio. If you go to forum.advicesradio.com, you can get there that way, or there is a button directly on the website. I put up a question thread there, and we will take those questions first each week. So if you want to post up over there, that is the best way to reach us, and then we'll also have our threads up on social media. So this question is from Roger, and he says, any tips on increasing appetite? I know on the last episode, you guys said that it's a lot of work to eat through and eating through pain. I'm 5'6". I'm stuck at 190 pounds. I'm keeping diet clean because I'm 15% body fat. I feel sick and bloated all the time, and the scale won't budge. I would like to avoid junk food. Eating dirty has worked in the past, but leaves me with way too much fat. Training push-pull legs, then 2 days off, then repeat. No cardio at the moment. Work as a nurse on a busy floor, 3 12-hour shifts per week. So it sounds like he's got a pretty active life. I'm sure that that's going to make him require even more food, isn't it, Dave?
That's part-time, isn't it? Three days a week?
3 12-hour shifts. 3 12-hour shifts.
That's still part-time. 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 Right. First thing I would be concerned about the bloat is the bloat from food volume or is the bloat from food type? Is he varying his food input sources? Is he varying his protein sources? Is he using any digestive aids? Is he using any enzymes, probiotics, cider vinegar with mother, anything like that to reduce bloat and try and keep his gut healthy. Because it may not be a food volume issue, and it may be a food type issue.
Hmm.
If there's something in there that's triggering his bloat, then basically his stomach will end up being distressed. And as a result, the nutritional absorption won't be very good, and a lot of things will be passing through without him getting the benefit from the food he's eating.
That makes sense.
Second thing is, I would actually look at increasing or adding a small amount of cardio, nothing particularly severe, just enough to get things up and moving and active, actually help increase his appetite. I don't see if what he's saying is correct, that looking at stuff like GHRP6s or MK677 as appetite increases are going to be beneficial, because if he's got the blow, it doesn't matter how hungry he is, he's still going to have the massive distension in his stomach, which is painful and causing him issues.
That's a great point.
I think the first thing is to fix the bloat. Now, that might mean a period of time where he pulls a lot of foods out and then starts adding foods back in. He might find he might be better going to a fish protein source, and mixing protein sources up a little bit. If he's just using chicken constantly all the time, then you can soon find that people start to get problems digesting it. Eating big is hard work, and there's an element of force feeding, but this doesn't sound like he's at that point. It sounds to be more that he's got digestive issues going on that's preventing him from eating more, or preventing him from utilizing the food he's eating as best as he could. So I would look at food types and gut health to start with. Make sure his greens are decent, but make sure his greens aren't too high. Now, if you are really pushing the boundaries for food, and this isn't particularly in relation to this question, but this is in relation in general. If you are really pushing the boundaries of food, then there's two areas in which you can increase food type to increase volume of others. So first thing is fats. We only need 50, 60, 70 grams of fat per day. Anything above that we don't actually require for basic function. So you can reduce fats down to that amount, which will allow you to consume more carbohydrate and more protein per volume of food. And the second thing is veggies. When you get right to the top end of this eating scale where you are really struggling to take up food, then I would look to start moving to a green supplement. Remove some of your greens and replace them with either carbohydrate or protein base.
I know a lot of guys don't like using vegetables at all.
I've always had an issue with bloating from vegetables. I've always struggled with veg, so I've always tended to go the supplementation way or just one greens meal a day. You don't need greens every day, particularly if you're eating carb sources that have roughage in them. So I used to go for brown rice, and I used to make sure that I ate potatoes with skins and everything else to get roughage in there, to get fiber in there, to keep me mobile that way.
What about the enzymes? Would you suggest using enzymes year-round, or would you suggest using them just when you start having an issue?
I would say just when you start having an issue. The danger of using all round is that you will end up with a bad dietary habit that you're masking with the enzymes. So it's much better to have a healthy gut and that to operate correctly, and then only need to add in things when you start pushing it. If you need enzymes on a basic maintenance diet, then I would question that something's severely wrong with your basic diet, or you have some serious gut health issue, because you shouldn't need them. If you haven't got any problems, you shouldn't need them when you're trying to maintain. You should only need them when you really start to push the food hard.
Did you use enzymes when you pushed up to 415?
A little bit, but periodically when I got problems, and I used to find I'd get problems for a while, I'd have to change things around, and then it settled back down, and I'd drop them back out, and then when I got a problem again, I'd bring them back in, rather than use them consecutively all the time now.
Okay. And you mentioned you used a lot of rice during that period. I take it you found that rice was the food that digested best. You must have already discovered that kind of going in, so you knew what you could ramp up.
Yeah, I mean, two things. One, volume of food is less volume. Two, ease. It's easy to cook, store, carry. Than large amounts of potatoes or other carb sources or more bulky carb sources. I just don't like pasta particularly, not in bulk. And so it's something I got on with pretty well all around. The one I struggled with was oats. I never got on particularly well with oats. So oats were just down to one meal a day, if at all.
Okay. We got another question. Oh, do you have something else you wanted to add?
No, sir.
Okay. I'm going to move on to our next question. And this is from James Potter. He is a bodybuilder, really good bodybuilder, too. He just kind of went into a retirement. And I've had him on my show a couple times, actually. He came out of retirement and he did really well. And he's going to see if he can push it even further now. He's got a pro level physique. He's got a good question here, too. He says the anti-E thing really had come full circle. I listened to someone say, may have been on this show. I lose track. There are so many that after the forums came out, it was considered mandatory all the time. I remember in the early to mid 90s, the really big guys in the gym would stay clear of Novadex. Pretty much that's all that was around then in the off season because they grew better without it. It was strictly pre-comp. The only reason you would use it off season is if you had visible signs of gyno. What are your thoughts on this? Because this has been something that's come up. I think that there's been a lot of shift in this topic as well. You know, it is thought that you need to run, you know, a high level of anti-estrogen. And specifically, I've seen in my own physique that if I run too much Arimidex while I'm trying to grow, it definitely has dampened the results.
Estrogen is always going to be a balancing game. The higher you let your estrogen run, the more potential you'll have for growth, the better protection you'll have of your lipids. But the downside is, obviously, the more likely you are to have water retention, the more at risk you are for gyno, and the more at risk you are for fat gain. So, if your diet off season is tight, you're not particularly estrogen sensitive, then I'd run it as high as you could because it will help promote growth.
You'd run the estrogen as high as you could?
Yeah, I used to run mine 200 to 300 ml.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to be clear that you meant that and not run the anti-E as high as you could.
No. You will see, and you do see, one of the driving factors behind higher estrogen use, higher anti-estrogen usage, is this desire to constantly, or this need to constantly be verified via Instagram, social media, and such like. And at the end of the day, nobody compliments a fat bastard. So if you're deep off season and your abs have gone a bit and you're very watery, then people will slag you off to high heaven. So guys are very nervous of this. They're very paranoid about this. So they end up running anti-E's all year round because they want to stay dry. They want to look good. And then they don't grow. And you see it all the time. And you see guys with quite decent gym strength but no size. And you wonder why they've got no size. And it's because they've got no bloody estrogen. Estrogen really helps with the management of lipids. It's very protective, positively in a way, towards lipids as well. So it does have some very strong uses. And we've, because we are so paranoid now about what people think of us and about our Instagram posts and our social media posts, and to a degree, you know, for all the guys, that's how they get their followings, that's how they learn their living, it's important to them, it's business for them. But the problem with that is that it can restrict growth. If you keep estrogen too low, you're not going to grow. Simple as. It's just how it is. And I probably get as much problems with people having libido issues from estrogen being too low as I do from people having prolactin or estrogen too high. So the old school boys that used to grow like buggery off season, the cycles were simple, they didn't stress too much about estrogen, they didn't worry too much, they got worried, they ate a shitload of food and they trained hard. And they grew.
Yeah.
these days we spend so much time worrying about the details, we forget the basics. Hmm. Train hard and eat a lot and you'll grow.
I like that.
It is physically possible to out-train a shitty diet.
I like that.
It's not possible to out-diet shitty training. Yeah, we do. We get too wrapped up in the details and we're too obsessed with estrogen management. And it's almost like standard. 500, oh, I'm doing the first cycle, what are you doing? 500 mega test and a mega ADEX every other day. Whoa, wait a minute. Why have you got ADEX in there? Now, how many of us actually test our estrogen levels at 3 weeks into a cycle to see where we are? Now, if I'm working with someone who I've got no prior knowledge of their estrogen sensitivity and they don't have either, I will start them on cycle and I will start them on Novadex as a protective measure. Or Raflex, which is even better. And then I will test the estrogen levels at 3 weeks, and then I'll adjust the management based on that result.
You said the raloxifen's even better?
Yes.
Why is that
Novadex,
better?
Novadex causes blood, can increase blood clotting.
Okay.
Which is one of its downsides. But it's still not a bad drug. And one of the things, actually, why I think that the old school guys used to cycle so much and recover quite well from cycle was because they were running Novadex, they kept some signaling alive when it came to hypothalamus and pituitary signaling.
Mm. Hmm.
Because the Novadex blocked those receptors, which is why it's used in PCT, because it blocks the receptors at those points, which increases GnRH output, creates FSH output, increases LH output.
Hmm.
So if used on cycle, it's going to have a similar impact. You're not going to produce test. But it keeps that system ticking over. The same as running HCG in the background for our cycle. It keeps the LADIC cells ticking over.
Hmm.
We have got so over complex and we've forgotten the basics. And estrogen is a very positive hormone and if managed correctly can be extremely beneficial.
Hmm.
But people too paranoid to get a little bit foul, too paranoid to carry a little bit of water. I've not seen one mass monster that stays lean in the off season.
Hmm. That's true.
You know, we got a few extremes like Lee Priest, but even Dorian Yates. I mean, he was a big boy off season. Vic Richards was a big boy off season. They all got smooth.
All right, I'm gonna go to our next question because this is one I have been waiting to ask you, Dave. We have our very first relationship question. Now, we talked to your wife because we couldn't come up with a name for this segment, and she's our resident namer now.
Just walked off in disgust. She's thrown an ice cream at me and walked off in disgust.
Well, you got free ice cream out of it, so it's a deal. It's a good deal.
Half-licked ice cream.
So, what was the name she came up with?
Well, there's a very well-known old advice agony aunt sort of spot in one of the big national papers called Dear Deirdre.
Dear Deirdre, okay.
So she said Dear Davey.
I like it. We have Dear Abby here. That's the big one here.
Yeah, same sort of thing. So yeah. It's Dear Davey.
Dear Davey. Okay, that's what we're going to go with. So guys, here's your first installment of Dear Davey.
We need a theme. We need a theme tune, so you got to get on that, Scott. We need a theme tune.
Oh, we already have one. It already played. It played on this segment right now already. It's there.
Oh, all right.
All post-production, though, so you didn't actually hear it, but the listeners will. Okay, so this is from Matt Marshall. He says, yes, what are some things a competitor can do to minimize the impact to their significant other? It's such a selfish sport, yet the person's family also makes sacrifices. How can you minimize that damage? This is a good question. This is something I think we all should be paying attention to.
Don't compete. There you go.
Done. Easy enough.
It's so, I mean, you're not right. Very few people are going to contest prep and not affect their loved ones.
Oh, yeah.
And very few loved ones are going to cope with contest prep without it pissing them the fuck off. Let's be straight with this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much you sit down and explain how shitty it's going to be and how much of an arsehole you're going to be. The reality of living with your arseholeness is far greater than the conversation ever described. Because you are a complete and utter pain in the arse. It's as simple as that. And we don't realize how severe the impact on our loved ones are. And we don't realize that even the basics of what we do, how annoying and frustrating that can be for our loved ones.
Mm, yeah.
Just the simple chores of meal prep, just the simple chores of taking meals when we go somewhere. Because the loved one would just love us to go and go to a restaurant with the kids when we're on a day out and have something nice. And you're sat there with your Tupperware tub eating your asparagus tips and boiled chicken breast. And they're all tucking into burgers. And you feel that it's unfair on you that they're all eating burgers.
Yeah.
But it's your choice. They aren't forcing you to eat asparagus tips. That's what you chose to do.
Right.
So why should they suffer you being a grumpy, snappy bastard because they're eating food that you want? You put yourself in that position, and that's something you really need to remember.
I agree.
This is my choice.
Yeah.
I chose to do this. I do not and cannot expect the world around me to accommodate me because I chose to do something that I don't like doing.
You stole my thunder. You stole my thunder, Dave. That's exactly what I was going to say, too. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, this is your choice. In fact, your loved one would probably prefer that you didn't compete. You know what I mean? That's not the reason they're probably dating you or married to you, right?
They support you because that's what loved ones do. And sometimes they support you at very much the detriment to themselves.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
wife supported me through projects very much at the detriment to herself and through areas and times when she was very uncomfortable and didn't like what I was doing. Or didn't like the impact on the family of what I do. And to a large degree, I never saw how much of the family it impacted. You know, she didn't like sitting in restaurants and eating her own food and me not eating the same stuff and me sat there with a coffee while she was eating and stuff like that.
Yeah.
She felt guilty about it. And that got her narky and she got pissed off at me because she felt guilty because she was eating food that I couldn't eat. And it's like, it's my choice. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember that, you know, you've got to remember that this is a choice. Very few of us earn a living at this shit. So it is a choice. And you can argue that, well, my partner met me as this, and so they should accept it. And that may be the case. If your partner met you as a competitive bodybuilder, then as long as you've been open and honest from the get-go of how it is, then yeah, they knew what they were getting into. But if you got into this shit after you met your partner, then it's not what they signed up for. This isn't the person they signed up with. They didn't sign up with this guy who's in the gym all the time, who's prepping his food all the time, who basically is a bit of a sad twat and doesn't have a life
yeah.
because he's prepping for a competition, because that's how they see it. It's not their interest. And you should never. Me and my wife's relationship work well because she doesn't go to the gym. And she's not into the sport and she's not into the lifestyle. And that's why we work well. And she keeps me very grounded. And you just need to listen and not react and try and walk away. Consider it, think about it, and then come back with a formulated opinion and try not to react at the spur of the moment because you're grumpy, you're tired, you're hungry. And I would say also, try and build in family time.
Mm-hmm.
Try and build relationship time.
Yep.
And just remember that family time isn't always relationship time. That time with your family isn't always time with your partner.
Hmm.
Because the kids take up that time. And a relationship needs some intimate and, you know, and some and just some relaxing and some chilling. And discuss strategies before you start. And discuss contingency plans before you start.
Hmm.
And almost in if you were into SMN and bondage and stuff, you'd have a skate word.
Yeah.
Have something predetermined, pre-prep, that if there's an issue, that there's a point that you sit and discuss.
Hmm. Did you have an escape word with your wife if you were going for a 415 and it got to be too much for her? Did she have a word?
Yeah, stop it, you fat fuck. My missus is brutal.
So you knew what she meant when you said that escape when she said that escape word, huh?
Full nose punches, mate. Full
nose punches whatsoever. Yeah, there is no question.
The reason that we get on so well is, it don't get me wrong, it hurts sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's the truth. She is brutally honest with me.
Yeah.
So there is no softening the blow, and you know, if I said, "Do I look fat in that?" and she'd turn around and go, "Fucking hell, do you? Yes." Greenpeace, the circling, come in, Shamu. You know.
Yeah.
Brutally honest.
Well, that's good.
But it keeps me grounded. It keeps me grounded, and I think a lot of us as bodybuilders are scared to confide in our partners about our insecurities and about the emotional turmoil we go through when we're attempting to do something like a comp and how insecure we get. And it's you need to be open. You need to let them understand how you feel. You need to be honest, because they're not mind readers. They won't understand that because she said this morning, "Oh, you look to have lost weight. You look a lot smaller," that you're now sat in a corner crying to yourself and considering taking 20 mil a deca.
Yeah.
Because of that one throwaway comment, because that's how. So you need to be very open and honest about how you feel and how things are going on, and just have some downtime. You don't need to break your diet to spend some quality time with your missus. But when you're spending that quality time with your missus, you need to give her your quality of attention.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of us go wrong. You know, and, "Oh, well, I've got to go do my cardio in the morning." All right, well, today I'm spending some time with the kids, so what I'm doing for my cardio this morning is I'm going to go have a game of football with my son. We don't have to walk a treadmill or stand on a stepper in order to get the cardio in that we need for our diet. We can put it in different ways. I'm taking the kids swimming. It's all burning calories.
Yeah.
So you can build in family time to what you've got to do. Obviously, the diet, there isn't that much movement on the diet, and I appreciate that. And certain things are just a case of suck and see. And if your missus is dead against you contest prepping and it causes huge friction in your diet and in your family and in your lifestyle, then you may have to face the fucking reality. It's as simple as this, that person isn't right for you if you want to continue competing.
Yeah.
So you have to make a decision whether the relationship and being who you were is what you want with that partner, or whether the stage is what you want. And that's your choice. No one can judge you on that one, because that's down to you.
Yeah.
But you know, if your prep continually caused friction in your relationship, bad friction, as in the amount of people I know that split up every time they contest prep, then you've got to start questioning, is this relation right for the two of you in what you do?
Yeah. You know, something else you said that I want to go back to, too, is you had said, you know, make sure that you work in that quality time and you work in the family time, too, and all that stuff. I think that, you know, there's going to be a point in the diet where, you know, things are going to have to be 100% if you're competing, and that it's going to be more difficult to do that stuff. But there's a lot of times during the year that it's not like that. So maybe there's three, 4 weeks.
This is the thing as well. If you know the last 3 or 4 weeks are going to hell, then everybody around you knows the last 3 or 4 weeks are going to be hell. So you make sure you get that time in up to those last 3 or 4 weeks. And then it's like, "Look, guys, next month, I'm a twat. I'm going to be horrible. Stay out of my way. And then after the show, we will do this as a thank you. We'll do this as a treat. We'll do this as a treat."
Yeah.
The amount of guys I see, and one very recently, actually, that are rebuilding their relationships post-comp, because their relationship has actually fallen apart. And the thing is, that ain't no good for you competing either. Having domestic stress on top of diet stress is just going to cause your cortisol levels to go through the roof. And then, you know what? You're going to be looking for those diuretics, because you're going to have water retention that you can't explain.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's give and take. Any relationship is give and take. And as bodybuilders, we're fuckers for taking and not giving back. Because we come off the back of a show and it's like, right, bulking season now. I need to get massive because I didn't place as well. I said, whoa, 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 hang on a minute, mate. Hang on a minute. There's a wife, there's kids there. How about giving them a couple of weeks of your time first before you start jumping into your off-season plan? Yeah. Because a week, 2 weeks ain't going to kill no bugger. And that's where, you know, a lot of guys do fuck up. And, you know, they'll, oh, she's fine, she doesn't mind. Really? Have you actually sat down and spoke to her about it, honestly? Have you actually sat down with your missus and gone, look, I know I compete, I know I do this. How much does it really piss you off, honestly, now? How much does it bother you? What really pisses you off about it? What can I do that will make it a bit easier for you? And you might find the solution is actually quite simple. You know, there's always workarounds to a degree, but there will be a point where if you want to compete, like you say, you know, those last 3-4 weeks, it just has to be where it has to be.
Yeah. All right.
And the other thing is, this isn't your career. You've got to ask, are you willing to pay the price you might be setting yourself up to pay?
That's a good point right there. That's a really good point because it, and that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately is that, you know, at the end of the day, most of us are not going to the Olympia stage. You know, in fact, a lot of us are just competing at the state level. And even if you were to be able to turn pro, would that be worth destroying a relationship over? You know, it's like a lot of guys are doing a state level show, and then if they're willing to ruin a relationship over that, then I think you really need to look at what you're doing, right? Because I think we've all been there, any of us who compete, because we are trying to push to 100%. But yeah, get that perspective back. You know, hey, I'm doing the Michigan State Championships. It's like, is it really worth ending this because of that?
I mean, I had the unique opportunity at the end of UC2 to see my wife interviewed about what she thought of it all, and that was a real eye-opener.
Wow.
A real eye-opener. And that taught me a lot. And one of the reasons why I don't pursue things the way I used to anymore, and I'm just more average guy when it comes to my training and stuff now, and why I've not been, because I said to her when we got here, I said, oh, I might go to the gym. She goes, I'd rather you didn't. She goes, I'd rather just have a, you know, holiday with us. And I'm like, fine, fair enough, longer. I go every week when I'm in Lomé. She doesn't want me to go for a week when I'm on holiday. I won't go. No big deal.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I can give her that week. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
I'm hardly competitive. I'm hardly carrying a physique that requires a great deal of maintenance. You know what I mean?
High maintenance guy. That's what you're saying. You're high maintenance.
I've just been pissing about the pool with the kids. You know what I mean? And stuff like that.
That's nice.
Throw the kids across the pool 5 times. That's a couple of sets of shoulder pressing done there.
Yeah. All right. Let's see if we can squeeze a couple more questions in here. I'm going to the new thread that I posted over at Instagram. This is from Jamie. He says, Eddie Hall has dropped a considerable amount of weight since winning the World's Strongest Man. How do you think you'd do if you turned to bodybuilding? And what do you think is up with this? I don't even know how to say this guy's name. What do you think is up with the strong man, the traps of the strong man, Konstantin Janus? I don't even know how to say his name.
No idea, but at the end of the day, I see no reason why he would have used anything to sight enhance his traps. It has no benefit in what he does.
Right.
So I just assume that it is a hyper-responsive, very dominant muscle, and when he does anything that's back-related, his traps take over to a great degree, and they've just been severely overdeveloped. I can't think of any other reason behind it. I mean, it's possible he's used some sort of sight enhancing in there, but I struggle to see the logic as to why he would.
Right.
It doesn't benefit his sport. Eddie, the guy has now, I'm a bit confused already because I saw a picture graph, fucking hell, how old am I? back to the 1900s.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of him the other day and it appeared that he had abs. And I was like, Jesus, that's impressive because he was 360 pounds.
Wow.
And then there was another picture, so a video pic of a day later, and he seemed to be somewhat smoother. So I'm not sure if this timeline difference, or someone suggested that one had been altered a bit and it was just a bit of fun. I don't know. the bottom line is he is consciously and very, very much seriously taking his weight loss and his health at the moment. And I think there's probably a backlash from how much he pushed the other way that he knows he needs to sort himself out. A bit like me, but on a bit grander scale, because obviously he's achieved far more. But bodybuilding-wise, one of the things that Eddie does have is a hugely developed core. And even though if that picture is genuine and he does have the abs through, which is super impressive, he's still sitting there with a very wide waist.
Okay, yeah.
So from a bodybuilding point of view, he's not going to cut it, unfortunately. And that's just down to physical structure of his physique at the moment. I mean, there's no way you pull 500 kilo deadlift without having one of the biggest, strongest cores on the planet. It's as simple as that. It's a key element in that lift is core strength. And so it doesn't surprise me that he's got a super developed ab wall, but at the same time, it structurally is the wrong shape for a bodybuilding stage. That's not to say he can't change that, because I do think he can, and I do think Eddie's got that mentality that if he sets his sight on anything and he wants it enough, he'll do whatever it takes to get there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, from what I've seen, he looks really well. He looks like he's very, very fit now. He's looked like he's very active. And for a man that still weighs 360 pounds, that is very, very impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive. So I look forward to seeing where he's going with it, because he seems to be being quite secretive about where he's heading with it all. But it'd be nice to see. Guy's done well. Can't fault him.
Somebody also posted, he says, someone asked Eddie about doing a bodybuilding show, and he said he would rather eat a dick than get on stage in a thong.
I just don't think it's his cup of tea, really.
Not his style, huh?
No, I don't think so. But that's not to say he can't use his physique changes for promotional purposes. He's got quite a few sponsors now. He seems very active in sponsoring quite a few things or promoting quite a few things.
Yeah.
So it may be because of that. It may be health driven. It may be just because he wants to prove everybody he can.
Yeah.
Because he is very much that sort of character. You know, you say to Eddie, you can't fucking do it. It's like, fucking show you what I can and can't do.
Yeah, right. All right.
Super impressed. Super impressed with what he's achieved.
I'm looking through the thread here, seeing what else we have. On the last show, he mentioned, being you, mentioned a interesting blood test to find out if the heart is failing. If that blood test shows a bad ticker, what's the usual treatment? Lose all muscle and get back better circulation? The BNP test, I think he mentioned.
That's the one.
Yep. I'll be asking my doctor about. I have a genetic bad circulation issue due to being a big guy. What's the fix here, Dave?
So BNP will show heart failure. Heart failure means that the heart is failing to beat correctly.
Okay.
The standard protocol for that would be usually a beta blocker to slow heart rate down. Potentially a blood pressure med if blood pressure is high. Possibly a diuretic, because heart failure would tend to have water collect in the lungs and around the heart when you sleep. So you usually go on a diuretic as well. And some cases of blood thinner. Then it's a case of rest and mild exercise, and then slowly, slowly increasing it from that point. But it's not like when we're unfit, we go out and do cardio. We can't really push the cardio too hard, because our response to doing harder cardio is that we get fitter. We're bodybuilding. If you want to be bigger or you want to be stronger, you train harder, and that will elicit a response in both positive in both those ways. With heart failure, you can't do that. You can't push the heart hard. It won't then suddenly start to get better. It's actually a more softly approach.
Okay.
So you start with very mild cardio, usually just walking, little and often. And then you build that up, and then you start to improve on that. You can still weight train, but you'll probably find that in initial stages, you're going more voluminous, more lighter, less heavyweight. And then it's just a case of listening. You know, listening to your body, making sure you're not getting too out of breath with things, and slowly building in that. Obviously, weight loss will help. The less body mass you have, the less work it is for the heart to do. And the other thing is to check if there's an underlying issue that's causing the heart failure.
Yeah.
That can be genetic, it can be lifestyle, it could be all sorts of things that are possibly causing the heart failure underlying. So there's also looking at treating that problem as well. Stress is a big, big factor in heart failure. What happens is you get so anxious, so stressed, so uptight all the time, your heartbeat goes irregular, or your heartbeat goes very short and shallow, and he starts to struggle to push everything around. So sometimes it can just be a case of you need to adapt your lifestyle, you need to reduce your workload, you know, something of that nature.
Okay.
I mean, you can have all the scene setting for heart failure, but not actually have it. And then work stress or emotional stress can be the straw that finally breaks the camel's back with it.
If people can avoid it, I would imagine it would be good to stay away from a beta blocker.
I mean, biggest mistake I made was not adhering to some sort of cardio program.
Yeah?
Yeah, without doubt.
I found with I took a beta blocker for high blood pressure. That was one of my options. And I found I couldn't get my heart rate up anymore. For me, you know, my situation wasn't dire yet, but I needed to control my blood pressure, and I started taking metoprolol at a low dose, but it just kept me from being able to get like a good pump in the gym. You know, I was able to find lisinopril, which was better for my situation, and it allowed me to keep working out. But I imagine it's a different case if you're at the point where you're experiencing heart failure.
Well, no, I mean, they're all very similar drugs, and it will depend on a GP and a health authority or wherever you are as to which one is their go-to as an initial start. But, you know, there are different ways of doing these things, and I'm sure if you're having problems with one, discuss it with your doctor about looking at an alternative.
Yeah. You ever hear of using beta blockers for performance enhancement?
Not particularly, not in any way that I've found seen to be beneficial.
So they talked about this on the movie Bigger, Stronger, Faster. So it's in a way that you would never think. People that are giving speeches, or people that are like a concert violinist, they will take a beta blocker so that they don't
slow their nerves and control anxiety and nerves and such like that. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that they can perform better at what they're doing. I've used a beta blocker in that case.
I thought you meant performance enhancing as in the gym.
It was, it was a little bit misleading the way I asked that. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely for on stage nerves, pre nerves. Yes, I've seen that. Various forms of beta blocker or mild sedatives. Particularly common in stuff like archery and marksmanship shooting.
I could see that for sure. Yeah, keep you super calm and super even. I've used because I had the beta blocker, and I had situations where, you know, I would go into a situation where anxiety would be higher, and I found that it was just like totally even, totally level, and able to keep my wits about me without getting any kind of rise whatsoever. It was cool.
And I mean, obviously, there's other ways you can do by learning breathing techniques and self-hypnosis and relaxation techniques and even yoga. I know a few guys that turn to yoga and they've found it super beneficial.
Why do all that, Dave, when you can take a pill?
Well, exactly. Welcome to the modern era.
I
know a couple of guys that just do 15, 20 minutes of yoga every morning. It's part of their routine now, and they swear by it. And these are... One in particular, he's not someone I would ever have said that, you know, that would be his thing.
Yeah.
He's a sort of bloke that goes, piss off your puff, I'm not doing that shit. And he absolutely swears by it. And he has an incredibly stressful job, an incredibly stressful lifestyle. And he just seems to sail through it. And he swears by it. It's all down to that.
No kidding. I've done some yoga. I did yoga for about a year straight. And I was dealing with anxiety at the time too. It helped a lot. It was really good.
I used to do a lot of self-hypnosis.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't anymore, but I used to do a lot of it. A lot of visualization stuff as well.
Okay. We should talk about that self-hypnosis sometime. That would be a fun topic.
Yeah, I used to literally, when I went into the gym, I'd already done the workout the night before.
Mm.
Before I went to in my head. Every aspect of it, from walking in the gym to walking up to the machine to sitting down to picking the weights up, everything was already gone through in my head.
Interesting.
In fact, it got to the point when I was doing it.
Yeah.
I used to get pumps.
Really?
Yeah, I used to be laid in bed at night and I'd get pumps.
Good luck falling asleep then, right?
You could feel a muscle filling.
Wow.
Because I was, in my head, I was going through the workout and I was imagining the muscle engaging and moving and it was causing blood to flow to that area.
That's crazy. I could see it happening though.
Yeah.
And I know that like yogis and stuff can lower their heart rate on command.
Yeah.
You're like the yogi of bodybuilding self-hypnosis.
I won't go that far. Yogi Bear, maybe, yeah.
All right, I'm going to move on then. Let's see. We got an easy one here. He says, where was this? We were talking about testosterone. He says, during a testosterone-only cycle, in order to maximize muscle growth, what would your diet recommendations be? So this is a real easy, basic question here.
What would my diet recommendations be?
Yeah. Eat more?
Yeah.
Eat more. This is something we've talked about, right? Because you were saying, you've said it a few times now, keep the fats lower and focus on, you know, getting the protein you need and then ramping the carbs, right?
You know, do you have to eat a super clean off-season diet? No, you don't. Can you get away with eating some shit? Yes, you can. A lot of it depends on how intensely you train. The more intensely you train, the harder and more frequently you train, the more crap you can probably get away with eating.
Yeah.
But there will always be, obviously, a few people that struggle with shitty food or whatever it may be. As long as you've got a good, clean, quality protein source going in there, yes, you can get away with eating a lot of crap. No, you don't have to be super strict. But there's that old age question. Are you training intensely and hard enough? And most people I meet and see just aren't, to afford a shitty diet. But yeah, ultimately, shit in equals shit out.
Hmm.
So plenty of the old school guys used to have very loose diets and make sure they got plenty of protein in, and then they just eat whatever they wanted. But they train like absolute animals every day, day in, day out. You don't see that in the gym anymore. You don't see that in a lot of guys anymore. So therefore, diet becomes more and more of a contributing factor.
Hmm.
I've already said this, you know, for a long time. You can out-train a shitty diet to quite a good degree. You'll never out-diet shitty training.
Yeah.
So I don't think you should necessarily just jump for shit. You know, I'd always say keep your diet in the off-season as clean as you can. And then it's just down to, well, how much do you want to put into what you're doing? How much do you want to sacrifice?
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. You know, for me, off-season, which was pretty much permanently anyway, diet was always clean because it didn't bother me. The only thing that ever bothered me was lack of food. Type of food has never been an issue. So I had no issue with consuming huge amounts of rice and chicken and steak and stuff day in, day out. It didn't bother me at all. It was all plain. But take that away from me and I would struggle. I didn't like feeling hungry. I always struggled with feeling hungry. But yeah, you know, you want to grow, you got to eat. You want to build a house, you need bricks.
Hmm.
You want to build a bigger house, you're going to need more bricks.
Easy enough.
It is that simple. It's not rocket science. We get way too technical, and for most of it, it's just not necessary. If you are optimizing every element of everything you do to its absolute maximum potential, then yeah, the science is important. But for most of us, eat clean, eat good, train hard, sleep well, boom, job done.
All right. I got another one here. We'll make this the last question of the show. We got a few more, and they're still coming in. So, guys, if we don't cover your questions this week on this thread, we'll definitely get to them all in the next show. Differences between a cycle for powerlifting and a cycle for bodybuilding.
Ooh. A cycle for powerlifting, I would say, would ramp up and androgenics coming into the show. When a cycle for bodybuilding, personally, I think you should lower androgenics coming into the show. For me, I don't understand why cycles get higher in intensity leading into a bodybuilding show, because at that point, your body's struggling more and more to deal with the toxicity of the drugs. So I think that pre-comp cycles should be enough to maintain muscle mass, but definitely the last 4 weeks going into the show, you're not going to grow. Yeah. So you can look at a couple of hardeners or a couple of high, well, one maybe high androgenic to increase hardness possibly. But apart from that, I don't see the reason why you would increase dose 4 weeks out from a show. Where with powerlifting, coming into a show, I'd look at increasing androgenics more and more and keep the androgens quite low at the beginning. So say you were doing a 12, 16-week prep for powerlifting comp. Probably start off with a base test and some DECA. When you get a bit closer, maybe throw in some oxys, and then as you're getting even closer, start looking at maybe some test suspension, maybe some M-tren, and then when you're getting very close, you might look at some check drops and some halo running right up into the competition.
Ooh.
So a powerlifting cycle would be quite, from a toxicity point of view, would be quite toxic very close to the show, but not long enough for that toxicity to build up to have a negative effect.
Okay.
Because what you're wanting, obviously, on the day of the comp is to create as much aggression and instantaneous strength as you possibly can. So that's where drugs like Halo, Check Drops, and M-Trem really do come into their own, because they will give you that aggression and strength on the day.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be running them 8 weeks out, because all they're going to do is, by the time you come to the day of the show, you're going to be so burnt out and toxic that you're not going to perform well.
It doesn't sound like a fun cycle to me. It sounds like irritating.
No, it's actually quite mild. It's not as bad as you might think.
Yeah.
And literally, most guys, if I was doing a powerlifting cycle, we'd probably run a test and deca base. And then, say, 5 weeks out, we might add in a bit of oxy, low dose, only on training days.
What's the purpose of the deca for on that?
Joint support, anti-inflammation.
Okay.
And it's not a bad strength drug all around. It's just a general good builder.
Okay.
And then coming into the show, we'd say 5 weeks out, we might add in oxy. And then a couple of weeks out, on depending on the training protocol of the individual as well. If they were doing like a max effort day and then a support day, so on max effort day, we might add in some test suspension. Then 2 week out, we might add in some M-Tren.
Yeah.
So you'd probably do 3 shots of M-Tren. Then obviously most powerlifters are going to take 3-4 days off pre-comp. So you're not running anything really for those 3-4 days.
Yeah.
And then day or so, we'd probably throw in some Halo and some check drops.
I've never used check drops before. I hear it's pretty intense experience.
It is, yeah, veterinary drug, disused by most veterinary practices because it made animals very, very aggressive.
I bet, yeah.
And that would be the primary reason for running it, is that aggressive aspect in order to attack the weight. But yeah, it's all that fine balance of increasing power and strength, but managing toxicity so that it's not peaking before the comp.
Yeah.
And that's with most cycles. There's a trade-off with any drug you take between, you know, the more it's going to create performance, the more it's going to cost you in toxicity and damage to the body. So you have to manage that. And the choices are depending on how well the person reacts, depending on what drug it is. Some people get huge things out of oxymethylene, some people don't. So if you don't bother running it. Some people get huge things out of M-Tren, some people don't. So You judge the drugs you're going to use based on how well the individual responds, both negatively and positive, to each drug.
Yeah.
But the key is that you can't run them for long periods of time. So it's just about timings. Get them in at the right point. Yeah. Whereas a bodybuilding cycle, I off-season definitely would be, I wouldn't run very high androgens at all. I'd look for more high anabolics.
Like
stay healthy, stay healthy, eat lots of growth potential.
Like what anabolics are you thinking?
Stuff like Deca, Test, VAR, Oxy are all high anabolic and low androgenics.
I know you prefer Deca over EQ. We talked before about the reasons you don't like EQ. You know, I have issues with Deca because I find for guys that don't come off, I don't see it as being an issue. But for guys that are running a 12-week cycle and then want to recover, I just have seen so many people have issues with their recovery on it.
Yeah, there's a fair point there. It does shut you down hard. It is an androlone at the end of the day. But and I suppose it's which is the lesser evil for you. But then again, if I was running Deca, I'd run HCG throughout cycle.
Yeah. And for guys that are going to stay on HRT, you know, it's definitely not as big of a problem then, right?
No, but then, you know, if I was going to run Deca and someone was running a cyclic program, I would make sure that they run HCG throughout the cycles. And I would put stuff in place to minimize the offset of running Deca. Now, if you're running EQ, then you've got to manage your blood pressure and your RBC.
Yeah.
But part of the point there to me that I find a bit daft is if you are suffering with elevated RBC through EQ, so then your blood letting, in order to lose some blood and therefore lower your RBC levels, then it's sort of like, well, what's the point of having the EQ in? Because one of its main actions of doing stuff is increase red blood cell, which increase nutritional transit, and then you're just removing it by blood letting.
It's kind of like running D-ball, but then taking a lot of AI to stop the conversion to estrogen.
Yeah, there's a start to get a little bit of a conflict there. And I mean, that's obviously not EQ's only action, but it's starting to get a little bit of a conflict there. So at the end of the day, the way I see it, even Trend, and I can't absolutely stand Trend, but it has its place if managed correctly. And this is the bit that people keep forgetting.
Yeah.
It's not that drugs are bad. It's just that they need correct management. And you have to respect certain drugs, and some drugs require a lot more respect than others.
Yeah.
But if you manage any drug correctly, you're going to get on a lot better than if you don't. And that's where people fall foul, because they don't.
All right. Well, let's wrap up here, Dave. Let you get back to your vacation. Let you celebrate your birthday with the family.
Mm-hmm. They've all left me.
What do you guys have any activities or anything planned for the day?
It's sort of like evening meal time nearly now, so I'm just going to go back up, get a shower, get changed.
Oh, that's right. We started at 8 o'clock in the morning or so here for me, so it's I'm just getting my day started.
No, mine's pretty much done.
Nice.
So that'll be evening meal and then chill out and just probably listen to a band or something, whatever's going on tonight.
Nice, man. Well, I'm excited for you. You know, you put a lot into what you do, and you deserve this vacation. So it's cool to see that you're taking it and celebrating some time with your family.
Thank you, sir.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally, and we will see you next time. 1, 2, 4, go! Drop out! Never trust a fucking hippie! Don't trust anyone. Quit school, don't work. Living out the music you funk. If I can't do it, so could anyone. Drugs are good. They let you do things that you know you're not should. And when you do, people think that you're cool. And when you do, people think that you're cool. Voices Radio Network.